It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Welcome back to Behind the Braves, everybody. I'm Ricky Mast from MLB.com. Alongside me, my partner here, Director of Braves Alumni Relations, Greg McMichael. And, you know, it's great when you get to go out to Las Vegas and hang out and see all the sights and the sounds and all that good stuff. But even better than that is we've got a Braves legend that lives out in Las Vegas, and we got to go to his house and hang out with him a little bit. Greg Maddux is our guest today on Behind the Braves. Greg, talk about your relationship with you call him Mad Dog Doggy.
Doggy. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, he goes Mad Dog, Doggy. Yeah, he's got a, and other ones that we can't necessarily share. Yeah. But
and he shared, well, as you're gonna hear. You know what? We'll let the fans hear it when it comes to the point. But he shared his nickname for you on here as well. So
yeah, Greg's good people, and it's always good to see him and his wife Kathy. We had a good time with him. I got to actually go out and play golf with him. That was part of the deal, and getting to spend some time with him just hanging, and as you're going to hear, Greg's as down to earth as anybody. There's not a whole lot of airs with him. I tried to get him to brag on himself. He won't do it, but it is truly remarkable the career that he had. Number one, just playing 23 years. I mean, there's only been a few guys. I think Nolan Ryan has the most. He played 25 years, and there's not a very big list of guys that have played between 20 and 25 years in the big leagues. And then when you start stacking up and looking at the innings pitched and the awards that he's had, I mean, truly remarkable career, but just down to earth. And he made the comment, and I don't think he did this during the podcast, but did he?
I'm not sure. No, no. I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, he made the comment. I said, well, this is pretty cool. We were up in his kind of his man cave and where we did the podcast, and I said, yeah, that's a pretty cool room. I love all those gold gloves. And he goes, well, there's just a little too much of me in here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's perfect for him. And he really loves his family, talked a lot about his kids, talked a lot about his brother and their relationship. And you know, and that's just who he is. And it's always been that way. I mean, I've known him since 93. I share that he was a great teammate. And I think I'm not alone in that sentiment about him, but he was good for me earlier on in my career, and I just enjoyed kind of catching up.
Yeah, and that was, you know, for me, that's the first time I've gotten to meet him. And, you know, me growing up watching you guys and those 90s era teams as a kid, being a fan of them, I mean, just from a fan side, it was really cool to get to meet him. And then we're sitting there recording this in his room there, where the view I had, I was staring directly at that trophy case the whole time, and there's the Cy Youngs, there's just gold gloves galore everywhere, all the stuff, all these cool, you know, there's jerseys, the bats, balls, all the stuff hanging on the walls. But he was just so down to earth, and he's just kind of kicked back and hanging out, that he's just a normal guy. It's like there's all these awards and stuff, but the way he phrased that with, like, man, there's just too much of me in here, that was almost perfect. Because, yeah, he was just cool to sit back and talk and genuinely nice. And before we turned the mics on or anything, I mean, God, they were nice enough. We had lunch with them at their house and just hung back. I became friends with his dog, Duffy, by the way.
Yeah, some cute dogs.
Yeah, yeah, that's a very cute dog.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, we won't go on any longer. We'll get you right to it. So here he is, Hall of Famer Greg Maddux.
That should do it. Ground ball to Lemke. He's got it. Greg Maddux has won his 14th game of the year. He did it with 78 pitches, and only 15 of them missed the strike zone. One hit, no runs, no errors, one left. And, folks, you just saw a...
All right. Well, Doggy, we're glad to be out here with you. We're visiting Las Vegas here for the winter meetings, and you've been nice enough to have us out to your house, and so welcome to Behind the Braves. And normally we do it in the alumni lounge, but we're here in Las Vegas.
Yeah, better place to do it, you know. Thanks for having me, and, you know, enjoyed playing golf with you the last 2 days, and we could, you know,
move on. How'd you hit them, by the way? How did you hit them with Greg McMichael?
Well, I brought the team down.
Did you?
Yeah, but we lost, but we didn't lose as much today. We're playing with doggies friends.
Yeah, it's golf, you know. Peaks and valleys right now. It's
the winter, right?
There's no peaks right now, but it's fun. It's good. It's the weather was great, and, you know, it was nice getting to hang around Mac again for a little bit and getting to reconnect. And
well, you know, yeah, and it's
brings
been
back
good.
Old times.
We've never been able to do this, and, of course, this is the first time winter meetings have been here, and sometimes you're doing a lot of work with UNLV and pitching coach with them, hanging out with your son who's a pitcher there. And we definitely want to talk about that a little bit. But, yeah, it's always good. The alumni around the country, any chance I get, you know, Ricky and I have talked about this, maybe making some road trips this year and talking to guys. Obviously, DJ and Javi are out there in San Diego. Do you still have a place out there?
You know what? We got a place in Dana Point, and I guess Javi's not too far away. I know we've mentioned a hookup for golf. We haven't done it yet, but maybe we'll do it next summer.
Yeah, oh, I know he'd love that, but it's good being here, and I know that right now with the winter meetings going on, I'm curious to see if you've been paying attention much, what's going on with baseball, whether you're following the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Braves, what's going on. But, you know, winter meetings, first time I've really been involved that much, but being here in Vegas, have you paid any more attention than normal?
You know what? Maybe just a tad. You know, I'm kind of stuck on the college route right now, and I will turn on baseball tonight in the mornings before I go to the golf course, and I'll get, you know, 20, 30 minutes of baseball news then. And, you know, being from Vegas and all the Bryce Harper stuff going on right now, so I'm paying a little bit of attention to that. And, you know, it's kind of background noise right now. I catch things here and there, but for the most part, you know, I'm kind of locked in, and being the volunteer coach at UNLV, it kind of keeps me busy. And you know, we play 50 games a year. It's a way to stay in baseball but not be too involved in it. You know, I do enjoy retirement. I do enjoy being the empty nester now, and at the same time getting a little taste of baseball.
Well, you're obviously known Kathy for a while, and it seems like you guys are doing well. You're coming up on 30 years, just like Jennifer and I. That's a huge milestone nowadays, and so it's great to see her. And what has been the biggest change for you guys? You know, Paige and Chase are not living here with you, but what has been the biggest thing that you've enjoyed being an empty nester?
Well, the freedom, you know, the no more carpools. You know, when you have kids, there's always practice here. They need a ride there, and then they start driving, and they turn into teenagers, and, you know, then they know more than you. You know how that goes. And, but, you know, now they're both out of the house, and they're living on their own. And our daughter Paige now has a job making her own money and her own decisions, and she just got a dog, so we have a grand puppy.
Nice.
Do all the dogs come here? You do all the dogs for Christmas? Is what's that like?
Yeah, it's a ruckus because my son Chase also has a dog. So wow. we'll have five dogs in the house and only four people. And, you know, sometimes they don't get along too well with one another. And there's a lot of ruckus going on. And you guys saw Baxter. Baxter's our, you know, 5-pound Yorkie. And, you know, he's got little man's disease. He thinks he's, you know, he thinks he could take on any German Shepherd around the block. So
He didn't bow up to us too bad. Well, I was kind of surprised, I guess, because I walked in with you.
I tell you what, you'd be amazed if a big dog walked in here, how the other two would run and Baxter would run up to it. So
Scrappy too.
Yeah, I mean, he's got little man's disease, that's for sure.
Well, what's the name of the guest dog, as you called him, who I made friends with?
Oh, that's Duffy. Yeah, Duffy's, you know, we make fun of Duffy because she's not the favorite, obviously. And, you know, she makes a good impression when the guests come over. She's always happy to see him. And, you know, she probably gets more pets from the guests than she does from us.
She did come right up to me. We became instant friends, but now I understand why. Okay, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what your coaching son, your son Chase at UNLV, was that was that something he was also for from the very beginning? Or?
Well, actually, he asked me, which was surprising because usually, you know, the hardest player to coach is your son, and he might be the easiest of the ones there. But, you know, UNLV had some issues a couple years ago with their coach had some personal problems, and the pitching coach took over as the intern coach, and they didn't have a pitching coach. And he asked if I would go out and do it, and I did it. I liked it. It's no different than pro ball, only the game might be just a little slower, you know. Obviously, the players aren't as good, but as far as baseball goes, it's baseball. Baseball's exactly the same whether, you know, you're in the big leagues in the postseason or, you know, you're playing high school, college, or American Legion. You know, baseball is baseball, and most of the kids are eager to learn. The difference between probably college and pro ball is, for me, that the kids aren't all in, okay? It's not what they do. It's not their livelihood. You know, you've got a few guys on the team that are good enough to be drafted and are going to try to make it their livelihood, and then you got the majority of the team that realize they're there for an education, and baseball is kind of secondary. You know, their main goal is to get their degree and move on, get a good job, and find a wife and have kids and all that. And, you know, as a coach, you just have to kind of accept that and do what you can to, you know, help them become the best player they can be. And, you know, if they got other things going on in life, so be it. You know, baseball's not the most important thing in their lives, where, Harry, when we were playing, it's the only thing that mattered. You know,
that's
it
right.
was, you know, win or go home, mm-hmm. you know, win or get fired or whatever. And so it's pretty cool. You know, just kind of a cool story. Last year we were in the playoffs, and my son Chase was going to face the winning team or the losing team out of San Diego and San Jose, and they were playing right after our game. So, you know, I go, hey, Chase, you know, let's go have dinner, figure out who wins, and then we'll watch some video of the game being played right now. We'll go over the hitters for the next day. And he goes, well, I can't. I've got an online test at 9 o'clock. So, you know, it just goes to show you here, it's kind of the biggest game of the year coming up, and he's got a test online at 9
yeah.
o'clock. And
right.
that never happened when we were playing.
Well, hey, I mean, he's got some good – his priorities are in line.
Well,
and,
it is.
You know, he's got to balance that. I mean, I was in – I mean, you came out of high school. I played 3 years at Tennessee, so I understand. I mean, you got really got two full-time jobs. I mean, you're the baseball player, but then you're also the student. And, you know, and it's a juggling act at some time.
Yeah.
What kind of players, what kind of pitchers Chase?
He does absolutely everything right you want your pitchers to do, with the exception of throw hard. I mean, you know, he fields, he thinks, he's a good baseball player. He's not just a pitcher. You know, but, you know, obviously he's not going to throw hard enough to get drafted, and, you know, that's okay. You know, he's going to do what he can to give us the best chance to win next year. And he's actually a real good example for the other pitchers coming in, you know, and I think he's very helpful with that. And who knows, maybe one day he'll probably get into coaching. Who knows what's going to happen with him, but he loves the game. He's got a passion for it, and you know, hopefully he can stay in the game in some capacity.
I know we asked when we had Tom Glavin on, we asked him about coaching his kids in hockey, and then later on now his son Peyton, I believe, at Auburn. One of the things I was curious about with him was the same with you, being someone that excelled at the highest level of your sport, is it ever hard to kind of temper your expectations of the kids you're coaching, or is that not really?
Well, you know, I think I always try to get the most out of my ability, and I think as a coach that's what I try to do with the players, is I want them to try to get the most out of their ability. And then, you know, if they're all in on that and that's something that they want to find out how good they can be, then I'm very happy to coach them and be their coach. If they're not, and, you know, the degrees what they're there for, then I'm fine with that too. You know, I'll just – we'll do what we can to have them make the team better. And, you know, we kind of work around their schedules all the time. You know, some kids have early class, so they'll get four at bats in the first inning, and then they leave. So, you know, we try to do what we can to accommodate both sides of it, like you were talking about, Harry. And hopefully the best happens.
Well, your brother has had a pretty good second career as a pitching coach.
Absolutely.
And now that you're tasting a little bit of that, so you've done some special assistant work with a couple organizations, and now you're doing some college. Do you see yourself maybe after Chase gets done and, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, 6 years from now, you might get the itch to maybe expand your role and do something professionally as a coach, or no?
Well, you know, like I said earlier, I enjoy being retired. I really do, and I enjoy baseball. You know, if something part-time came along, I'd definitely look into it. But having been around my brother and with him in Texas for the 4 years I was over there, it's not part-time, not by any means.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'd go in for 5 games with him, and, you know, we're leaving his house at 11 in the morning and getting home at 11 at night and doing it again for 5 more days. And I spent 5 days doing it. He spent 9 months doing it. And, you know, I enjoy the freedom. I enjoy being able to play in a golf tournament in the middle of the summer or you know, taking the wife to Hawaii in spring training time and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, if there's a way to combine the two, then I'm all in. But as far as going full time, full bore, I don't think I'm built for that right now.
Yeah, that's a tough job. I mean, yeah. You know, you get the travel as being, you know, what the travel's like. You were a player, coaches, and they actually spend more time because they're doing a lot of extra stuff. So
yes, they do.
I get it. Well,
being a player is easy. Coaching's a little tougher.
Well, we're fortunate. We've got quite a few alumni that are still, you know, being involved. You know, Terry Pendleton is involved, and Eddie Perez. We got guys. You know, Fred's doing some scouting for us.
Good.
Yeah, he's doing really well. He's been with us for a while, and so it's good to see those guys around. And but I know they work hard.
Yeah,
I mean, they got a full schedule, so it's good.
Yeah. Has Chase ever gone to Uncle Mike for advice over you, or just not over you, but just looking for a different take on something?
I'll send Uncle Mike to Chase.
Okay.
Let's not kid ourselves. You know, I look back at my career, and I've had a lot of really good coaches, and I learned something from all of them. Okay. And I mean, we could start with rookie ball and go to my last year with Darren Balsley in San Diego. I learned something from all of my coaches. And I want my players to talk to other coaches, as many as they can. I'm not the coach that says, hey, don't talk to that guy, he'll screw you up. No, I want my guys to get all the advice they can get from anybody who's willing to give it. And then if they could pick out pieces of it, and if it makes them a better pitcher, I'm all for it. So I actually encourage my players to, if they have a coach at home, if they want to call them, or if there's something going on in the summer that they want to see, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I did want to ask, you know, this, like I was telling Kathy over lunch, if we started going through all your statistics in your career, we wouldn't have time to talk about anything else. But I did want to bring up one thing, and I wanted to ask you how you felt about it. So when I was going back and just, obviously we played together, we knew how good you were, the things that you were able to accomplish on the field were pretty amazing. But when you go back and you just look at the numbers, I'm looking over my shoulder and I see all the gold gloves there, and I look at, you know, 8-time All-Star, 18 gold gloves, 4 Cy Youngs, you know, World Series champion and now Hall of Fame inductee. Do you ever just kind of say, damn, I was good? I mean, because you look at that stuff and you're obviously the best pitcher I've ever seen, but I mean, those are staggering numbers. And you think about your career, because I know, I mean, you're a humble guy, you know, you're down to earth, but yet you have these just crazy numbers as a pitcher, and you were able to do things that guys weren't able to do. And so do you ever kind of like shake yourself and thinking, man, I think I maximized.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's games and months that you probably would do a little bit different. Yeah, you know, if you had a chance to do them over again, but, you know, I just tried to get better. Honestly, I just came to the ballpark every day and just tried to get better at something, whether it was a pitch to a hitter, maybe it was filled in a bunt a little bit better, or having a bullpen to get mentally better for my next start. You know, it's just and then accidentally I played longer than I ever thought I would play, and then all the numbers started adding up and everything, but didn't really ever get too caught up into everything. I just tried to keep it as simple as possible and just, you know, probably I could sit here and say I went to the ballpark every day with and just tried to get better at something. You know, maybe I did that 80% of the time, maybe 50% of the time. Who knows? But the goal was to just do something each day that'll make you better for the next time you play.
Are there any particular pitchers in today's game that you like watching, that you're kind of more apt to, if you know they're going to be throwing, you want to tune in?
You know, I like watching Kershaw. I was lucky enough to – my last year was his rookie year, so I knew him a little bit. Greinke, I always had a lot of respect for. You know, my brother's pitchers that I was around a little bit every day, I always had a little special interest in and still follow those guys a little bit. And, you know, you watch the guys pitch now and it's like, okay, wow, that's amazing. These guys are freaking blowing cheese left and right with nasty breaking balls. And, you know, we were taught in the 80s and 90s to throw strikes. And these guys are taught now to kind of pitch out of the strike zone now. And, you know, it's kind of a whole different way to pitch. And, you know, you try to, you know, you see it in the playoffs and on TV, and you're thinking, man, he can run it in on him here and get him out. And you see a slider in the dirt. And, you know, it's just kind of a different way of thinking now. But, you know, it seems like the pitchers having success, you know, the majority of the pitchers having success, maybe Verlander's the exception. He pitches in the strike zone a lot. But, they're pitching out of the strike zone, and, you know, it's almost like they're trying to strike a guy out when the count's 0-1 or 1-0, and we didn't try to strike guys out till we got two strikes on them. So, you know, to me, that's kind of one of the biggest differences that I see now, but just the physical ability to throw the baseball the way those guys throw it now, is it's kind of fun to watch, and it's like, man, if I could throw like that back in the day, man. I mean, you're seeing Nolan Ryan pitch almost, well, I shouldn't say Nolan Ryan. You're seeing guys with Nolan Ryan stuff pitching. There's one or two on every team now.
Yeah. Yeah, Steve, and I have this conversation on a weekly basis with the, you know, we've got a pretty big alumni base in Atlanta, and they all want to talk about the difference between, you know, today's game and when we were playing. It is interesting. It's fascinating. Ricky and I have had this conversation just talking with our executive staff or our baseball operations staff, and how the game's, you know, shaping up and how the game's evolved, even in the last 5 years, in the last 10 years. This has been a big jump in just the philosophy. So later on, we're going to be able to talk with Perry, who's our assistant GM, and we're going to really pick his brain on kind of trying to break some things down for us and what they're looking for and what they're trying to do and trying to create a balance, because you have this spectrum, you know, of analytics and philosophies on how they want the type of players they want. And
yeah,
you know, we just re-signed Johnny Venters, and I'm sure you remember Johnny. Johnny was a lefty, and he just had the power sinker from the left side. And so we just re-signed him. It was great to see that kind of stuff. You don't see that ball moving a whole lot these days.
Yeah.
Like your ball moved and the change-ups that you and I threw, you don't see that a whole lot. You see the just that up-in-the-zone four-seamer.
Yep.
It's a lot different.
Yep. Spin rate.
Yeah. Yeah. We were always trying to decrease the spin rate. They're trying to increase it.
Yeah. We say, man, the guy's got a good hook. He can spin it. And they go, oh, yeah, that's 1,900 spin rate on that. That is a good curveball. Yeah, league average is 1,450. That guy can get it up to. it's a whole different vocabulary now.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you know, but there's something to – if the hitter misses it, it's pretty good. You can forget everything in the world, and you can have all the data and everything you can see with your eyes and everything, but sometimes the best way to read a pitcher is to watch the hitters. And I think that gets lost a little bit. You know, I think, velocity is overrated. I think it's nice. It's a definite bonus if you're a pitcher. But I think, I tell my pitchers, I go, it's not a speed contest. It's a pitching contest. You know, let's not lose sight of that. If you can throw at 95, more power to you. But it doesn't mean the guy throwing 88 is not going to beat you.
Right.
So just keep in mind it's a pitching contest. And the same fundamentals apply today that applied 30 years ago, and that's if you could locate your fastball and change speeds, you can get anybody out. And it's easier to do if you're throwing 95 as opposed to 88, but it's not a necessity.
Is coaching in college, I would imagine that the data, maybe some of the analytical side of the game, isn't quite as much of a factor there. It's a little more old school, if you
will. There's zero analytics in college, and there's zero scouting. I mean, the scouting you get is if you got a buddy that is a coach for a team that played him last month. That's your scouting. And so everything's kind of done. You kind of do what you do best. And if there's something you see during the game or maybe the next game or the following game after that that you can use to your advantage, then that's something you'll try to do. But there's very minute scouting going on before the series starts. Even if there is scouting, it's from a month ago.
Yeah.
And we all know in baseball, players can, you know, obviously hitters are a creature of habit, but they will change. They will be quick, or they will be slow. They will be jumpy, or they may be locked in. So, a lot of it's done on the fly, and, you got to trust your eyes and trust your judgment when you're out there.
Well, one thing you were really good at was being able to look at the hitter and how they're reacting to your pitches and how they're reacting to other guys' pitches, and then you make an adjustment. And you were telling the story about Manny Ramirez and earlier on talking about he was waiting on a curveball and it took three at bats to get it, and he finally told you and Derek Lowe that he was going to hit it out, but he kept missing the fastballs because he wasn't looking for them.
Yeah.
But that pitcher had to know that he was looking for breaking ball because he kept being Manny Ramirez was never
Correct.
Behind on fastballs.
Correct.
So you had to make that adjustment, and that's a really interesting thing. I don't need scouting reports as much when I can see what this guy does, and then I've got to make an in-game adjustment, and that requires a great bit of feel for the game and for your stuff and understanding and watching, because the hitter's game planning just like your game planning.
Correct.
And so there's that little bit of cat and mouse, and I know that you were always real good. I know Smoltz tells crazy stories about, okay, this guy's going to – you're telling him he's going to hit this ball over here, he's going to foul this one off here, and then he's going to pop up, and I've heard David Justice tell a story about you shifting him around, I want you to move over here because this guy's going to hit this and all that. And you just knew what these hitters were looking at. And do you think that was a gift? Do you think that's something that you had to work on, or
no,
how did
I
that come
on
about?
It. I mean, that's all video. That's all that is video. And we were fortunate before all the games were on TV and teams actually had video. I remember, it started in Chicago on WGN. We'd get a VHS tape of the game, and you'd sit there at the remote control, and you'd fast forward and rewind, and you could watch the games that way. And then Atlanta, TBS. I mean, back in the day, the Braves and Cubs were the only two teams on TV. And then, mid-90s it started? That's when the video picked up and the MLB package and all the games, and then they're all edited. And then it got to the point where I could put in Greg McMichael's last 30 at-bats against right-handed hitters. And, I could see you go through the series with the Phillies, and then you went to New York, and I see those at-bats, and then you went to Montreal, and you could see there's his last 30 at-bats. So it just, the video to me just became a part of scouting or pitching or the preparation before each start. And you understood if you throw balls in certain spots, it's going to go to certain spots on the field. But you had to throw it there. If you didn't throw it there, it wasn't good.
Execution, unlike our golf game, right? Up.
Well, yeah, exactly. Knowing where you want to hit it and where you actually hit it's a different story.
We were talking about it. It just didn't quite always go there.
Yeah.
Hey, Mac, you see that tree over there? If you'll just hit it right there, it'll just – okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to try.
Yeah, just peel it off that tree a little bit. Double cross.
Well, I've read, you know, talking about the – kind of along the same lines of those stories, the stories of – of you kind of maybe giving a guy something you know he's going to hit in a you know earlier in the season to set him up potentially for a more meaningful spot in the postseason. When was the right time to do that, to set him up that far in advance?
Well, it didn't happen often, but if it did, when the game didn't matter, when the game was already decided, I was taught Dick Pohl. Remember Dick Pohl? Dick Pohl, you know, you say you get all these things from all these different pitching coaches like earlier. Well, Dick Pohl was my AA pitching coach. And then he was my winter ball pitching coach, and he was my pitching coach for a couple years in Chicago. And his big thing was hitters are a creature of habit. And what do hitters remember? Well, they remember success. So if a hitter has success off you, he's going to remember that for a lot of at-bats. And the whole point was, if you give them a pitch, they hit out of the park, chances are they're going to be looking for that pitch for a long time. So that was kind of his little theory on it a little bit. So, you know, if you're in a situation, maybe in spring training or maybe you were down 5 runs or up 5 runs, then you can maybe play to that just a little bit, you know, 2 outs and nobody on. You don't mind giving up a hit there. You hope it's not a home run. But if a hitter can remember some success off you, then there's probably a pretty good chance that's where he's sitting off you for the next, you know, 5 at-bats, 10 at-bats, maybe 20 at-bats, depending on the hitter. And so, you know, you could use the failure you've had against certain hitters, you know, to kind of play for your favor for the next 10 at-bats off them or not.
Interesting.
Well, a completely random question, but I just have to ask. How did Greg McMichael earn the nickname Harry? Because I've heard. Can we not talk about that on this podcast?
Oh, my gosh.
You can edit all this, right?
Yeah.
So we can talk about it. Harry, one of the nicest guys in the world, clean cut. I mean, if you look at him right now, he's got his collar up around his neck and everything. But if that dude walks into the shower, you're like, whoa, holy cow, take your sweater off when you're in here. You know, it was either, hey, you use shampoo or soap on that. What are we going to do with that?
See, I was thinking it was something, you know, like just a character named Harry or something. No, it's just on the nose. Yeah. That's exactly
so
what
he's,
it is.
So he's introducing me to his buddy. Oh, yeah. He's introducing me to his buddies today, you know, at the golf course. And he goes, hey, John, meet Harry. He goes, oh, hey. I know my name's Greg. Oh, Harry? Greg? I said, Dion gave me that nickname way back in the day.
And you need to.
It's funny, to this day, Dion and Doggy are the only ones that call me that. It's funny. He just answers the phone, Harry, what's going on?
I'm changing your name in my phone to Harry and Michael now.
Otis sometimes calls me that, so it's funny.
Well, what were some of your memories of each other as teammates that are, since we're kind of in that realm?
Yeah, I was going to bring up one of the things that I thought was really good as a young pitcher. Of course, we're not that, we're not age-wise, we're not that much different, but he was up the big leagues before me, and when I met him, he had just come off his first Cy Young award. I was making the team as a rookie in 93, and one thing I appreciated about Greg is that he was good with the rookies. I mean, I remember I was the only rookie on the team. I remember him inviting me out to dinner, and what was interesting is that, you know, he orders a porterhouse steak, and he asked the chef to cut it up for him.
I did?
Yeah, he used to do that. So he gets this huge steak, and it's all cut up for him when he eats it. But we did that. I think that was in Philadelphia. But one thing I appreciated about him was that he was a good teammate, that he treated everybody the same. Didn't matter if you had a year, you know, 10 years. Of course, you know, he's a starting pitcher, so he hung out mainly with the starting guys. And I was in the bullpen. But also remember – and the one thing I carried out throughout my career is that whenever he picked up a baseball, and he threw, it was typically on the mound. Very rarely were you out in the outfield throwing catch. Because, you know, and I remember that, and I remember him also always working from the stretch when he was getting his work in on the side. And one time he said to me, I said, well, why do you always throw from the stretch? Because you spend a lot of time in the windup. He said, well, you know, that's where your money's made. When there's a guy on second base or a guy on first base, that's the only time they typically can score. He didn't give up any home runs, so they had to get a couple singles. So he always worked in the stretch, which I thought was – that was a lot of wisdom that was imparted to me, and of course, and then also just getting your work done on the mound, because you need to be thrown. You don't need to spend all your time on flat ground, because the mound is where that's where your office is. So those were two things that impressed me as a young pitcher. But then also just, you know, we had guys like Greg who were just good teammates, and that really helped, you know, young players like myself, you know, figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Besides his natural coat, yeah. do you remember any?
He tried to win.
Yeah,
I remember you were a rookie, and no one knew much about you. And then you faced the Yankees in spring training, and you went through Boggs, Bernie Williams. Who was the other one?
Mattingly, I faced.
Yeah.
It's
and it was like going back to, well, the hitters will tell you if he's in it good or not, you know. And you didn't throw hard, but you had a nasty changeup that you could cut or sink, however you want to say it. You could make it look like a slider or a changeup. And some of the best hitters in the game couldn't hit you. And you're like, okay, game on. Because you kind of made the team. It was kind of a surprise, really.
Yeah, I was a
maybe not in your eyes, but everybody else's before it started, you know. But you could pitch. You could pitch. And
I remember one time I came in, and we were in Chicago, and he wasn't pitching. He was charting, and he was inside. I guess on the road, you guys would do the chart on, because, you know, WG and all that stuff. So I come in the game, and it's bases loaded, nobody out. And I strike out the first guy, strike out the second guy. I get two strikes on the third guy. And I give up a pop-up to center, and the wind's just, you know, it's one of those days in Chicago where the wind's just blowing straight out. Well, somehow it gets over Grip's head, and it, you know, it hits at the base of the wall, and two runs score, three runs score. He ends up hitting a double. I think all three runs scored. And I come in the clubhouse, and I'm like, God, and he goes, man, you're the biggest tease I've ever seen in my life. We thought you were going to get out of it. Yeah, it was. Those are some good times. Yeah. Of course, when you're winning all the time, things are good.
Yeah, it is. Winning takes care of a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
Everybody has character. You know, your teammates have character when you're winning.
Yeah.
Well, that's just working in baseball and working with the team. I think that's. It extends beyond players on the field. You can feel just in the office when things are winning. I mean, it's just easier to be around each other and like each other, you know?
Sure.
I think that extends beyond it. You can feel that as a – I don't know about fans maybe, but just being on the outside but still working in it, it goes throughout the building, that feeling, you know?
Whole organization. Yeah.
You were never on a team that struggled, right? I mean, did you
have – Yeah, I was on a couple.
The couple of the Cubs teams before you came to Atlanta? Okay.
Yeah.
See, Mike, I mean, I didn't really experience that at all. And I know, and then being in Atlanta for the last 4 years and seeing the team struggle, and then all of a sudden this year the team come together, win the division, first time since 2013. Man, everybody was just like, man, this is so good. And I'm like, well, that's the way it should be. It's a great feeling. It's tough being on a team that struggles.
Yeah, it is. But you can still have fun.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know? That's what, you know, Bobby always used to say, you know, you don't have to win to have fun. Well, we won every year we were there. Like, what's he talking about?
Yeah, that's
okay,
right.
So, you know, it's funny because the first year at UNLV, we were like, I don't know, 20 and 40. We were like last in the league and everything. And I'm thinking, okay. That's what Bobby's talking about. You don't have to win to have fun. You have more fun when you're winning, but at the same time, he was right. You don't have to win to have fun. So I think, you know, we were in Chicago. We had a lot. I was on some pretty bad teams over there early, and, you know, we still had fun. We didn't have the fun we had in Atlanta that we had playing there. But, you know, winning definitely helps. But I think just – you know, with a good attitude, you can go to the ballpark every day. You're doing something you love, even if you're in last place. You have an opportunity. You're making a living, probably the best job you could ever get. And, you know, again, you don't have to win to have fun, but, man, it sure does help.
Was there a, and I can note I can edit this. Was there a favorite prank that you enjoyed playing on guys?
Not really. Just kind of the everyday banter and making fun of each other, and you know. But as far as putting effort into the pranks and all that, Smoltzy was good at it. I used to like when he used to play the angry bellman. I don't know if you guys ever got.
I don't think I saw that one.
You never saw that one?
No.
Yeah.
I remember he used to do his beatbox. You know, he'd go.
Oh, that was good.
That was
yeah.
good too.
That was always fun.
What, the drum major or whatever.
Yeah. But you know those nights where you get into, let's say, New York, it's 2 a.m. and you beat the bags by 20-30 minutes. And, you know, you're like fighting to stay awake, but you want your bag before you go to bed. And Smoltzy would go down and to the bell stand, and the guys start calling down for their bag, and he would be rude to them. Yeah, what number are you? You know?
I did not.
Number 12, get your own bag. Come down here and get it yourself.
That's awesome.
That was pretty good.
That's good.
I used to like that. And,
oh, my gosh.
You know, Smoltzy was the one that would put time into all the pranks and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And get your hotel key and hide in your closet and get there before you and jump out and scare you.
Somebody did that to Huddy.
No, Huddy did it.
Oh,
Huddy did it to Eddie.
Oh, to Eddie.
And
oh,
they had a film crew there for it. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Had the scream mask and the whole deal. Yeah.
Well, hey, we want to be respectful of your time, and we appreciate you having us here. We do have to get back, and we're going to meet with Perry and so, but this has been great catching up with you. Thanks.
Get the analytics stuff down.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, he's gonna learn us a little bit, right? Well, thank you again so much for your time and have us. We really appreciate
Absolutely.
It. Absolutely. Well, our thanks again to Greg and Kathy Maddox for having us out today, for having myself and Harry McMichael out to their home for a little bit and have lunch and then hang out with him for a while. That was really a lot of fun. It was cool to get to sit down and talk with him today.
Yeah, Greg, we could have spent another easily 30-40 minutes just talking, and we actually had to cut it off because we had to get back and do something else. But it was a good time being able to spend with him, and I he hasn't even been to SunTrust Park.
Right.
And I told him, I told Kathy the same thing. I said, you guys need to come out and see it. You'll love it. And told him that, you know, it's a special place, and so hopefully in 2019 they can make it out and come back. And I know the Braves fans would love to see him, and as well as everybody in the organization.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I remember when I was mentioning in the intro there that he signed. You know, when I was a kid watching you guys, and I remember one of my buddies was the first person I knew that managed to get a Greg Maddox jersey, and he wore it to school. Like, Maddox had just become a Brave, and that was an exciting time. And just to see from that point when he first became a Brave and then what would transpire over the next decade or so with the Braves, what a special time and what a special career, and a career unlike any other in the game.
Yeah, there were some significant moves that Mr. Schuerholz made back in the 90s. And when you look at Fred McGriff and you look at Greg Maddox and Terry Pendleton and Sid Bream and some of those moves, bringing back Bobby Cox, you know, and John Schuerholz being signed, those were all key moves that set our organization apart for, you know, years to come. And Greg was right in the middle of all that. My rookie year, he had just won the Cy Young Award for the first time from the Cubs, and we signed him. It was a $25 million contract.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were debating between – the organization was debating between Barry Bonds and Greg Maddox. And
mm-hmm.
I think we're all excited that front office made the right call there.
Well, if you remember, our last guest on Behind the Braves a couple weeks back was Perry Manasian, and he said – and this wasn't on the podcast. We were just chit-chatting before or after it. And he said he still thinks that's probably the greatest free agent signing of all time. And it's really hard to argue with that.
That's amazing, you know, coming from a guy who's knee deep in it right now and mm-hmm. working through all that. That's
high praise.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, we hope that this serves as kind of a late Christmas present for you, a holiday gift for you. Hope you're having a great holiday season with your friends and family. And, you know, the good thing is that the calendar is getting ready to turn 2019, which means spring training and fantasy camp are just around the corner. So we're getting closer. And it's going to be an exciting time. You know, we've been at this behind the Braves for a few months now, and now that 2019 is rapidly approaching, I'm really excited to see where we can go from here. And the feedback from all you guys has been amazing. I was just reading on iTunes, you know, people leave the 5-star reviews, and they leave positive comments, and that in addition to just making us feel good and feel like we're doing a good job here, it helps, you know, spread word about the show. Tell a friend, share it on your Instagram story, tweet about it, whatever you want to do. So we very much appreciate you listening to us, and we hope to grow this thing bigger and better in 2019.
Yeah, and we hope you have a great holiday season, a good new year. We're excited about where this thing's going to go, and we haven't made, you know, total plans as far as where we're going to go with, but we know there's going to be more of it, and we're going to be more – have better guests, and not better. We've had some pretty amazing guests.
Yeah, that's
it.
We're gonna have
some continued. You know, hopefully the great guests that we've had are gonna continue. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of alumni we haven't gotten to. There's a lot of players we haven't got to. There's a lot of staff, a lot of coaches. So we're planning to get to, and maybe some of the fans can put in requests on who they would like to hear on Behind the Braves. I don't know. I guess you get that feedback that maybe they could put that in there. And we'll do the best we can. We have a full season, and we know that the Braves season is going to be exciting this year. We can't wait for spring training, but maybe that's something we can do in the future with our fans from Behind the Braves.
Absolutely. We're looking forward to it. Well, again, like my partner Greg McMichael here said, we hope you're having a great holiday season, and we will see you on Behind the Braves in 2019.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.